On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we rev it up shiny and chrome for the post-apocalyptic wasteland as we scour the desert for Christian themes in Mad Max: Fury Road. Do all good war boys go to Valhalla? Isn't Aquacola a good thing for redemption? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 72. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately, our Christian walk. You are tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Brendan, what did we talk about last week?
I think last week we talked about 2001 A Space Odyssey.
No, Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. Oh. I guess you got confused because so many people were saying that Interstellar was this generation's 2001 Space Odyssey by Stanley Kubrick, a film by Stanley Kubrick.
Right. Yeah, that had to be what I meant.
Well, they're nothing alike. Have you seen 2001 Space Odyssey?
I haven't even seen it.
No, you haven't missed a thing. In fact, I was going to, this is my addendum in my oh and another thing, or my afterthought for last episode, was I did want to have a short discussion on this. I wish David Gaddy was around because he would be able to show me as a film student how I'm completely wrong on this, because there are two kinds of people that have watched 2001 A Space Odyssey. There are those that say that movie was dull. It made no sense, and I don't like it at all. And then the other team says, "You just don't get it, and you don't understand art." So, Brendan, it's a movie full of long, drawn out shots. I mean, like 19. Somebody broke it down. If you read reviews, it's great. 4.5 minutes of a spaceship, entering into a dock, things like, it's just these long drawn out things. But the problem is, now, have you ever watched Apocalypse Now with Marlon Brando?
Sure have not.
Oh, well, good. You saved yourself. You can watch that up until the end, too.
Oh, I hate movies like that.
Yeah, at the end, they go off the deep end. So anyway, I just wanted to make it clear to everybody that the two movies are nothing alike. And the major difference is the story. And I think that we were able to do a good job to redeem that film for Jesus, for people to be able to use that in order to spread the gospel. In fact, we have a comment, voicemail coming up a little bit later on in the show in our feedback section that will affirm that a little bit. Did you have anything that you needed to add to last episode?
Oh, no, I'm good.
So everybody get back, listen to episode number 71 of Finding Christ in Cinema. We had a fun discussion on Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. Other than that, what movie are we doing today?
Mad Max Fury Road.
Furiosa Road?
Furiosa Road with special guest star Mad Max.
Okay, are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Here we go.
My world is fire and blood.
Everything is dependent on oil.
We are killing for gasoline.
The world is almost out of water.
Water.
Now there's the water wars.
Here they come again.
Everybody's gone out of their mind. You're not the only one, Max.
Out here, everything hurts. You want to get through this? Do as I say. Now pick up what you can and run.
Hey!
lovely day!
So what's up, Brendan?
Doesn't that get you excited?
What?
All of that?
That's all it is.
So what are you doing?
What are you up to?
Are you saying that this movie is full of sound and fury?
Oh, man.
Signifying nothing?
Isn't that exactly what you wrote in your Monday movie review all those months ago when this movie was released?
It is.
It is.
However.
Yes.
After rewatching it and already knowing what's going to happen,
yeah,
it kind of made the experience, I would say, a lot more enjoyable.
All right. Let me give you my initial impressions.
Okay.
And I watched it for the first time yesterday. I put it off and put it off and put it off. And I'm watching it. And for 115 minutes and 30 seconds, I was embarrassed.
Oh.
I was ashamed of myself.
Oh.
I'm thankful that I told my wife ahead of time, I'm going to go and watch this movie now. Because if she would have walked in on me as I'm watching this, I would have been embarrassed. Like I was doing something naughty. Okay? It was, I think the term is an embarrassment of riches with that, you know, that sound and fury. But then all of a sudden, at about an hour and 16 minutes into it, boom, there you go. You just, now I can redeem the film for it. So it was, I went back this morning and started watching the beginning again, and I was able to stomach it a whole lot better.
Yeah.
There are things in here that are so, I mean, the whole movie is so cliched. I mean, it is one giant cliche.
Yeah.
But, you know, people, if you haven't watched this yet, you must put up your filters. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And there is
copious and even, I would say, gratuitous amounts of violence, of gore, a little bit of gore,
just disturbing images.
Yeah,
the mother's milk, you know, factory. Come on, really? Mm-hmm. That needed to be in there. Okay, they are using women's milk, human women's milk for, I don't know what they're using it for. It doesn't even matter. But think of a modern dairy farm where they have that equipment that they hook up to the udder of the cows in order to, you know, mechanically draw the milk.
Get the most out of it.
Okay, you know. And then put human women in that. Take out the cows and put in human women. They show that in this film. Why? Why? That's just gratuitous, is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is it meant to shock? I mean, is this director and writer so brilliant that they knew that scene, oh, this is going to elicit the response that I'm hoping for? Maybe it is. Perhaps it is. But you'll want your filter up.
Well, let's take that route for just a second. Let's say that it wasn't in there gratuitously, that it did have a purpose.
Uh-huh.
If it did have a purpose, I would say it goes to show the character of the bad guy of the film.
Immortan Joe.
Not immortal.
Yeah.
Immortan. More on the language here in a second.
Okay.
But
By the way, there is no swearing in this film.
That's what I was really shocked by.
Yeah.
I was like, man.
Yeah. I mean, they make up their own words. I mean, it's kind of like watching The Maze Runner. They made up, you know, they have their own made up, profanities.
Right. But I think what you were just describing with the mother's milk and a lot of the grotesque images you know, classically using grotesque, it goes to show the character of how corrupt he really is.
Yeah. And does a good job showing the depravity of man.
Yes. Yes. But then that's what makes Robin Hood and her merry sisters, I mean, Furiosa.
Yeah. And the scantily clad supermodels.
Yeah, well, that goes back to your 80s stereotypes.
Yo, man.
A lot of this movie was 80s stereotype filmmaking, especially with you've got the golden sand and the blue sky going off into the distance, you know, just that future post-apocalyptic. I said it right that time.
Yes. You did it so well that, wow.
You know, it just, like you said, it's a lot of cliche, but there's something about it that's going to keep me coming back to it.
Okay, before we go any further with those thoughts, I have a new segment that I'm introducing. I don't have a stinger for it, but just imagine fanfare.
Okay,
this little segment here might not fit on every episode, but when it can, it will. And this will be IMDb user reviews in one sentence or less.
Oh.
I lined up five for you, Brendan.
Good luck.
Okay, first one that I got was 4 stars out of 10. That's a rare thing on a movie, because on IMDb, user reviews, these are just normal people in the world. So you only get, normally speaking, you only get either 10 stars for a film or 1 star for a film. I found a 4-star review. Listen to this. I didn't hate it, but I have absolutely no desire to see it again.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Next one.
What a shame.
1 star out of 10. I walked out after 1 hour and 15 minutes. Ha! He missed it by 30 seconds.
He missed it.
By 30 seconds.
Oh.
You could have.
See, this is why it's important to endure.
Yes. Just 30 more seconds, buddy. And then you could have said, aha. There's something redeemable. Next review. 10 stars out of 10. Well, this is a definite masterpiece. This is what you get when you open up the asylum and let the inmates run it, okay?
Oh, hardy.
User reviews. Okay, next one. 1 out of 10. So we just went from 10 to 1. To be clear, there are no redeeming qualities about this film. Okay, more on that later. The next one. 10 stars out of 10.
Hey,
we're back. So what is he going to do to refute the previous one? Now, this film doesn't have much of a plot at all. But seriously, you're not going into this film for an intense plot. This is a film that almost didn't even need one at all. That's his argument. That's his apologetic for giving 10 stars to this film. Then the final one, we're back down to 1.
Oh.
And you're going to love this one. If you like Avatar, you'll like this movie.
Oh. Laugh it up, fuzzball.
I'm sorry, but longtime listeners will understand the beauty of that review.
Why was that even in there?
Okay.
Michael, why did you choose that one? No, I know why you choose that. I know why you chose it. Don't answer that question.
So I just picked 5 reviews at random.
Oh, I'm sure.
One was almost in the middle.
Okay. Almost. It was
barely. The others were 4.7. Either this is a masterpiece or I walked out. The guy that says there are no redeeming qualities about this film, that he must have been with the guy that walked out at 1 hour and 15 minutes, because this film can be a powerful tool for sharing the gospel.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's all I'm going to say about that right now. So we have our IMDb user reviews in one sentence or less under our belt. Now let's get back to the film. Because the people that are writing it's a masterpiece, okay, they're wrong. But the people that are saying, you know, 1 star, there's no redeeming quality about this or value to this film, they're wrong as well in our estimation. So let's talk about this a little more on the technical aspect and storytelling. I think that thankfully, the story itself is cliched. because it is one of those stories where the, you know, the best stories have elements of the greatest story.
Yeah.
And that's really what I'm pulling from on this. But give more of your thoughts.
I like the scope that it has. One thing that really got me, and this is gather around, children. Gather around.
Brendan's going to learn you something.
Yes. I've talked about it before. I can't remember which episode, but the A effect. Does that sound familiar?
No.
The alienation effect.
No. Tell me more.
Okay. What this is, it's a technique. It's an artistic technique that storytellers use specifically in theater. And it started alongside German Expressionism.
Okay.
This is when you've got the stage, going back to the roots, you've got the stage and you've got the play happening, but there's some things in the play that almost, it's like they almost snap the audience outside of the flow of the show.
Uh-huh.
And it makes the audience question their surround, like, whoa, what just happened? What am I doing here? You know?
It's kind of like a cattle prod or like, something, huh?
Yeah. Boom. For example, the guy that started it, his name was Bertolt Brecht. He had a play called Mother Courage and Her Children. And her children, for example, were named weird stuff. One kid was named Swiss Cheese. I kid you not. Swiss Cheese.
Now sounds like a Monty Python.
Now the story. If you take away all the A effect, the story is a sad story because it's about a mother who has to sell, you know, highly equipped war weapons to raise money for her family.
Okay.
So it's kind of a sad story. But you're getting in this mindset, oh, this is a sad story. I feel empathy for the mom, but I feel empathy for her kids. And then you hear the name Swiss Cheese. Huh?
It's shocking.
Yeah, it's just a quick little jolt.
Like, yeah.
What? Why? You know? And the way Brecht described its usefulness in a production is that it gets the audience to prepare themselves to set aside some things that may be not gratuitous, but just something that
absurd.
Yes.
Okay.
That they may not be able to understand for the moment and just pay attention to the bare bones of the story.
Okay. So it's a diversion tactic, in a way.
Yeah.
Okay. How does that apply to, Furiosa Road, with special guest star Mad Max.
With the futuristic language that they have.
Okay,
you've got people describing things that we would say are good or cool. They say, "I never thought I'd see something as shine as that." Uh-huh. It's very shine. That's very chrome.
Okay,
and I hate this chrome spray paint.
Yeah,
I just. There are some other instances where, even the names of the girls, of the wives, quote, breeders.
Yeah.
The fact that they're even called breeders, that's enough of a shock to send to the audience. Like, oh, that's how they're viewed.
That assaults your good you know, taste.
But again, that points to the character of Immortan Joe.
Okay, so you're describing. It seems to me that you are describing this production in terms of you're using that method that came out of German Expressionism as a framing device as to how to understand a film such as this.
Yeah,
I would imagine that the person who developed that first named a character Swiss Cheese in order to shock people, if you sat down and talked to them, they would say, now this is not something that you use wantonly or without great finesse and skill.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, did George Miller, did he use skill when he was employing that method?
I think he did, and that's why I wanted to get back to this film.
Okay.
Because I knew watching it the first time in the theater, I knew there was so much stuff going on that I was missing stuff.
Let me ask you this before I forget. Do you think that he wasted that, though? Because you have kids on here. I mean, this, you know, these 10-10s and the masterpiece, it's definitely, you know, 15, 16-year-old kid that logged into IMDb. Whereas, you know, I'm just psychoanalyzing
reviewers that I don't know. The more apt reviewers are leaving
ones. Because there are a bunch of them, of the ones that you're looking at and going, this guy's like 27, you know, he thinks he's real smart and real clever, and so he's going to talk down this film, and anybody right. that does like it is a moron and some kind of a caveman troglodyte, you know. So you got that, you know, I'm smarter than this, and if you like it, you're not. But then you have this is a masterpiece because it's just action. It didn't even need a story. That's what one reviewer said. Yeah. It was just brilliant masterpiece because of action. So you have these two extremes, and that's what you get. Like I said, when you let the inmates run the asylum, you get the extremes. That's why this is going to be a fun little exercise, our IMDb reviews in one sentence or less. So getting back to the question, now you have established what George Miller was using, or the director was using. You have asserted that he used it with great skill. Was it wasted? Is he trying to get a message across? And if he was, did how many people got the message?
I don't know.
I'm wondering if the message that we got out of it was even intentional, because we're gonna show people how to share the gospel with this film.
Yeah.
So okay. Obviously, you can't answer that question, and I knew that going in. I was wondering if you had a gut feeling.
Okay, ask it again, and I'll go with my gut feeling.
Okay. Do you think that he, again, we established.
Oh, was it wasted?
Well, yes.
Okay. That depends on who watches the movie. Because some people won't get it.
Okay, generally speaking.
Generally speaking, yes.
Okay. And what do you think possibly caused... I mean, could he have done anything so that it wasn't as wasted? I mean, do you think that...
I don't know, because from my personal vantage point over here... And Michael, you're going to laugh at me.
No.
But I do think this film is very high art.
Okay.
And very technical. There's a lot of communication going on from the creator to the audience. And there's a lot of things that will go over the audience's head. There is a lot of things that went over my head. And I'm still going to... I'm going to watch it like I watch Interstellar. Like, I'm going to find something in that first viewing...
Yeah.
That I can latch onto, even if everything else, you know, blows up behind me. I'm going to watch it again with that first thing in mind. Then I'm going to watch it again because I found another thing, and keep going so forth and so on.
Here's what I'm going to propose.
Okay.
Somewhere along the line in the recent past, probably with the advent of CGI, but I understand that hardly any was utilized in this film. I don't know. I didn't look.
Guitar player.
Okay, that was too Swiss cheesy for me. That was just too much Swiss cheese for me. That guy needed to be offed real early in the film. But I think that, and we're talking gratuitous, you know, that seems to be a key word here. What is it with these long, drawn-out action sequences? I mean... You know, the Transformer movies, not only do I not like them because of I don't care for Shia LaBeouf, but the fight sequence are like an hour and a half long. You know, it's like, I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And I think that may be one area where the filmmakers lost it. They lost it in this film because they said, you know what, we can just do this long, drawn-out car scene. And then it doesn't matter that Mad Max doesn't say hardly three words put together through the whole film. Nobody will notice because they're going to be geeked out over all these explosions and this, you know, flame-throwing guitar player on a bungee cord hauling down the desert, man. Oh, my God.
Being powered by a drum-powered vehicle.
Yeah, that's just too much Swiss cheese. But, you know, I mean, that's just my... That's my theory. That's my theory. Because I look through more user reviews, and that's where you find out what real people are thinking. And they're all like this. One star, you know, there's nothing good about this film. Well, and I disagree. 10 stars. It's the greatest film ever because, like with what that one guy said, this film almost didn't even need a plot at all. It didn't need a plot. How can you have a film that doesn't need a plot?
Yeah,
that's 2001 Space Odyssey.
I was going to say kind of like what we were talking about earlier. If it doesn't have a plot, if it doesn't have movement, then it's just B footage.
Exactly. It's just B-roll.
And there's nothing. I mean, it's fun to look at. Now, granted, a lot of the first films that came out were just B-roll before storytellers actually.
Well, that's
because
the magic of film was a real thing. It's not anymore.
Back then, with B-roll, the medium is the message.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Going back to
think about that. Yeah, Marshall McLuhan.
Going back to episode number 70, special episode number 70 on Finding Christ in Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well. Okay. So we talked that. Do you have anything to add to that? Do you want to give some shout outs or do you need to?
Give some shout outs.
Okay. Go ahead.
So let's go ahead and get the Sideshow Bob out of the way. Mad Max, Tom Hardy himself, as Max Rockatansky.
Yeah.
Rockatansky.
How can you judge his performance? What do you judge it based on?
Well, I know I, for one, cannot ride on the hood of the car like he did.
Well, you need to be on a Hollywood blockbuster set, and you can.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. You too, Brendan Taylor, can ride on the hood of a car.
I could be someone's blood
just bag. Like Bane.
Oh, just like Bane.
I didn't know what would break first. The Fury or the road?
He didn't even say that much, but he did pull in some Bane.
He did well. He the first movie, the first half of the movie, he was in a bath. He's in a mask.
Yeah, but I mean, besides that, here's his reaction.
My name is Max. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I love FCC's very own Tom Hardy. I didn't love him in this film.
Okay.
That's just me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fine, but it could have been so much more. They should have let him bring in a little bit more of Bane.
They should have let him bring in more anything.
It's something. Yeah. Let him bring something, the poor guy. But he got paid a boatload of cash, so.
Hey.
His wife was happy.
Yeah. Let's move on to the real star of the show, Charlize Theron.
Yes. Okay.
Furiosa. Imperator Furiosa.
Yes. I thought she did an excellent job.
Yeah, she did.
Yep.
Especially with the CGI arm.
Yeah, always fun.
Yeah.
When they Lieutenant Dannerizer.
Yeah. Is that a verb?
It is now on Finding Christ in Cinema. See, we make up our own language, just like in Mad Furiosa Road, with special cameo appearance by Mad Max.
You heard it here, folks. she was good. I really liked her.
What about it? I mean, what did she do that impressed you as an actor?
Her character demanded that she have that look of determination with no softness the whole time, except that one moment when she realized that the green place that they were going to had been destroyed. And then there's that one shot of her walking out onto the sand dune.
That's the one that most people pan. People were panning that shot in IMDb on the user reviews. I mean, people saying that's the worst shot, the worst scene in film history. They can't just say, people can't just say, that didn't do anything for me, I'm giving that a 4. No.
No.
That was the worst thing that's ever taken place. That's what you get on the internet.
No, get out of here, internet. Yeah. you have no authority, you network, you.
I thought you played
that
it well.
That was so good because you just see her break down.
Uh-huh.
And she's been the rock for these.
Oh, for
these escapees that she's been saving this whole time. She's been that solid rock, and to see her break down like that, even if it is just one, you know, maybe drawn out shot, it could have been done a little quicker.
Remember that when I'm making my point.
Okay. I should have brought my notebook. But no, I thought she was really good, especially working with the CGI arm.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Okay, what about Zed or whatever his name is? Chrome Boy. Chrome Shining Valhalla Man. Kid.
Nux?
Yeah, Nux!
Nux, played by Nicholas Holt. Yeah. Nicholas Beast Holt, because he's the new Beast in the new X-Men movies.
Oh, okay. And he's your age.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's...
So what'd you think of his performance?
Really good. Again, going from not necessarily the same thing the whole time like Charlize was, but the ability to go from one way of acting to another, because when he is the war boy, when he is fighting for Immortan Joe, when he is trying to reserve his place in Valhalla, he's that extreme, careless,
jackbooted thug.
Yeah. He's all about that. But then, which I'm going to get to in my point,
once he
realizes that that's not how he needs to be, his whole way of operating changes to a softer, more human.
It's a paradigm shift.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really like that. I mean, the character was written for that, and I think Nicholas brought it to it.
Okay, so. Who else needs a shout out in this film? Name one other person.
I'm looking.
Who did the score? Because I loved the violin work in it. I did. I thought that was, well, especially the some of the scenes that I'm going to play to make my point. Other than that, there's no other shout outs.
Well, hold on, I'm looking.
You really are looking.
No, I'm looking for who did the music.
Oh, okay.
I'm still looking for who did the music. Well, that doesn't help.
No.
His name's Junkie XL.
Okay.
Swiss cheese.
Well, he plays a mean violin, then. Let's just say that. Yeah. Junkie XL Swiss cheese.
All right.
Shining Chrome.
Shining. I am awaited.
Okay. Let's jump it. Let's redeem this film for Christ, because as I said, this will be the third time that I've said it in 30 minutes. This is a great film to use.
Oh.
I mean, it was blockbuster. You got people loving the cars and the explosions, thinking it's a masterpiece.
The flame-throwing guitar player.
It's a masterpiece. So those people should be real easy to reach with the gospel. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, then you're going to have other people that say this is the worst film that's ever been made. It had no story, no point, no plot. Well, now you can talk to those people and say, yeah, it did. Man, thank you, George Miller, for writing such a Christian tale. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that a little audacious or bombastic?
Bombastic.
Okay.
A little grandiloquent.
Do you expect anything less?
No.
Okay.
Don't. Okay.
Jump into it.
All right. So we have for today The Unpleasant Sacrifices of Nux and the War Boys, or All Good War Boys Go to Valhalla.
With Thor.
Yes, with Thor.
Yeah.
And, okay, we haven't even started. Breaking from this right now. Why was there such an obsession in the 80s with Valhalla?
Heavy metal and stuff like that.
Heavy metal, yeah. Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll ask John Wilkerson. He's a metalhead.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
So, John, if you hear that, you know, by all means, let us know.
So, anyway, these war boys, these Half-Life war boys, they want to go to Valhalla. And the only way to do that is to sacrifice themselves to the Immortan living among them. In the movie, this is Immortan Joe, which is a very vile character, I love how the movie sets up how corrupt and how depraved he is.
Yes. Well, he starts right off saying, I am your redeemer.
Yes.
I didn't catch that the first time.
By my hand, you will be lifted up.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a bold statement, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is he corrupt in his own mind, but how he doesn't want his people to be addicted to water.
Yes.
How absurd is that?
Yes.
That is ridiculous. Do not become addicted to water. You'll resent its absence.
Yes.
Oh, man. You dirty trickster, you. You stinker.
Yes. You. What a right stinker.
Yes.
I mean, that psyops is what he's performing on these people, which every good dictator knows how to, is a master at.
Yeah.
Psychological warfare.
Now, getting back to the war boys, these war boys are described as, quote, comma crazy.
Yes. Instead of kamikazes.
It's a fusion of the word kamikaze and crazy.
Yep.
Now, Michael, I don't know if you know or not, but kamikaze refers to the suicide attacks by military aviators from the Empire of Japan against the Allied naval vessels in the closing stages of the Pacific campaign of World War II. Designed to destroy the warships most effectively than was possible with conventional attacks, so saith Wikipedia.
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
They also had a very elaborate ceremony that they would go through before they would go out and kamikaze themselves.
Oh, it was very, very honor driven.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
There was a lot of honor to it. And, of course, Kamikaze then being a combination of kamikaze and crazy, it means it's an adjective.
Is this out of Wikipedia as well?
No, this is just me.
Okay.
It's an adjective used to describe someone, namely a war boy, who is crazy enough, who is, quote, crazy.
I'm a Star Wars boy.
Enough. There you go.
Okay.
To sacrifice himself for an Immortan in order to gain safe passage into Valhalla.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
it's like the Berserkers. That's another thing to look up. I'm getting
that actually. What does it remind me? I've heard that before.
I want everybody to do that themselves.
Oh, Michael, yes. Don't tease me like that.
Look, because that's really what these guys are, even more closely than a kamikaze, because the kamikazes were actually quite rational in their suicide. But the Berserkers, look that up, friends. Okay. So,
all right. So, our story focuses on one particular war boy named Nux, and he is a little clumsy. He just can't get it right.
Poor Nux.
See, he in his first attempt,
a Half-Life war boy.
Yeah, poor guy.
He just needs a little blood.
What a lovely day
and an opportunity to get to Valhalla. That's all he needs.
He needs some O negative, yes. universal donor, yes. high octane blood by his blood bag. Special guest star
cameo.
Nux. So in Nux's first attempt to gain passage into Valhalla to be awaited, he floods his car with guzzoline.
Yes,
not gasoline, guzzoline. He floods his car with it and tries to blow it up in order to stop the rebellious Furiosa and the hijacked war rig, but he fails.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day! I am the man who grabs the sun! Riding to Valhalla!
See, that's a berserker. That's a very intense, riled up individual.
Yeah, yeah. And I love in this scene. This is one thing I do like about this movie a lot, is that when it's showing you these, especially this sequence when he's filling up he's filling up the car with the gasoline.
Yeah,
and he's going to light it on fire and blow it up. He's not taking time to explain to the blood bag with his words. The camera just shows it.
Yes.
That's what I like about this movie. It's very visual storytelling.
But it's a moving comic book is what it is.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Well, I think it wasn't this a graphic novel?
It wasn't, it is now.
Yeah, it would work really well. However, Mad Max busts through the window, and you in the clip you heard the gasoline filling up in the car, and then he also lights up a road flare. And the plan was to stick the road flare flame into the gas, kaboom. However, Mad Max breaks through the window and stops the flare, and then somehow the war boy crashes the car, Nux and Max go flying through the air, road flare fizzles out.
I like that shot, too.
Yeah, that was a nice little shot. And then on to the next scene. Now, Nux has yet to be converted because he goes back to the traveling war party with Immortan Joe, and they re-catch up with the war rig, with Furiosa, Mad Max, and he's going to try again. And this time, he even gets the Immortan Joe's blessing.
Yes.
He even gets that blessing.
I will.
Special permission. Yes. Well, let's just listen to it.
Immortan, if I get on the rig, there's a way inside.
What is your name?
It's Nux. I'll pike her in the spine. Keep her breathing for you.
No. Put a bullet in her skull. Stop the rig. Return my treasures to me. And I myself will carry you to the gates of Valhalla.
And I awaited.
You will ride eternal, shiny and chrome.
Prepare! Help people more! Edgar!
Mediocre.
Yeah. Now, I wonder if he wants to go to a restaurant and order some okra.
Poor Nux.
Nux. Okay,
just
sorry.
Can't get it.
Nux can't get it. He can't. He even had Joe's blessing, but he couldn't get it. Now, this makes me want to ask the question: what is it about these sacrifices that makes them fail? Why are they detestable? In the grand scheme of things, because they're not detestable to a Morton Joe. However, we know what kind of character Morton Joe is.
Yeah.
Let's look at some Malachi.
Okay, please.
You know, do some Malachi. Malachi. Malachi chapter 1.
He was
one.
The Italian prophet.
Malachi. Chapter 1, verse 10, out of the New Living Translation, how I wish one of you would shut the temple doors, so that these worthless sacrifices could not be offered. I am not pleased with you, says the Lord of Heaven's armies, and I will not accept your offerings. What was it about these?
I like in the NIV, it says, I will accept no offering from your hands.
Mm-hmm. And this gets into the Israelites just being wanton with their sacrifices, almost like Cain was in the very beginning. He's like, this isn't your first fruit. They're putting on, let's see, all this is in Malachi chapter 1. And I'll just start with, let's see, what's a good starting place? Verse 7. The people say, or no, God says, you have shown contempt by offering defiled sacrifices on my altar. And then you ask, the people ask, why? How have we defiled the sacrifices? And he says, you defile them by saying the altar of the Lord deserves no respect. When you give blind animals as sacrifices, isn't that wrong? And isn't it wrong to offer animals that are crippled and diseased? Try giving gifts like that to your governor and see how he is pleased, says the Lord of Heaven's armies. So the Israelite people, they're not offering their best. They're not offering, they're not even offering things they would give to their government officials, to their governor, to their earthly leaders. And that's what makes them detestable toward God. Nux, his desire to sacrifice is a little, kind of like these sacrifices described here, it's a little blinded, it's a little misguided. Because if he really thought about it, he's sacrificing his life for a corrupt character, a very corrupt individual. And so then again, so are all these other war boys. But for the purpose of this story, his sacrifices stick out because they don't work until he realizes that he's not sacrificing for the right thing.
Right.
Which is for the life of, or for the lives of the breeders, of the other women, of Max, of Furiosa, the women, the tribe they found, of, you know, of what the Green Place used to be. And when he realizes that, that's when his sacrifice counts.
When you're across safe, I'll jam the throttle and follow you.
Pass.
witness me.
Very, very engaging scene, because in the clip we hear he's pushing the girl that he fell in love with away. He's pushing her out, saying, look, I got to do this. And then, of course, Rictus, who is Immortan Joe's son, or one of his sons, and Immortan Joe at this time is now dead. Rictus jumps on the hood of the truck of the war rig. Is it the war? No, it's just another vehicle he's driving. He jumps on the hood and lifts off the engine, bare hands, just lifts it off.
The blower.
Yeah, the blower, yeah. And when Nux says, witness me, he then turns, he cuts the wheel really hard, causing it all to blow up and spin out of control. And that is his worthy sacrifice.
Yeah.
And that really follows the example of the sacrifice that Christ had for us when he laid down his life for us.
Yes.
So I'm going to close it out with Ephesians chapter 5, verse 2. Live a life filled with love, following the example of Christ. He loved us and offered himself as a sacrifice for us, a pleasing aroma to God. Nux, in that final sacrifice, that was a pleasing aroma. It wasn't detestable. And for the sake of the story, it was very pleasing, at least to us as the audience. I don't know if that makes us the arbiter or not. But just for the way the story flows, that is his pleasing sacrifice, because it was for people who could not protect themselves.
Yes.
It was for the innocent.
Yes.
It wasn't for some corruptible guy with a God complex, you know.
Yep.
It was noble.
A couple of different places, Jesus quoted Hosea chapter 6 and verse 6. And in one of the places, Matthew 12, verse 7, if you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. That shows a good change of heart, because what was Nux full bore? How was he going to get to Valhalla? He's going to stop Furiosa and these people, blow himself up, and that was going to be his acceptable sacrifice. But that was ugly, because God wants sacrifices, wants he desires mercy,
yeah,
not that sacrifice. So he went from condemning the innocent, chasing down the innocent, to sacrificing himself
to save them, to protect
them. He's a beautiful character, isn't he?
Yeah. that was one of the reasons why I came back to the movie.
Yeah.
That was probably the main first
reason. Well, I remember you talking about that after you had seen it. That's a great character to point to, because also he's very animated and very, you know, obviously he's a major character in the in the film.
And what I like is that you could even, especially with a lot of the stuff that's going on now, it's always been going on, but with you've got him as the example of the religious fanatic, and you've got the war boys as examples of the religious fanatics.
They're zealots.
Zealots. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you know, the brazenness that they bring to their religiosity or to their religion, and how they force that onto other people until people that really,
it's very reminiscent. These war boys and stuff really reminds me of like ISIS and what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, they'll go out and sacrifice themselves, martyr themselves, so they can go right to Valhalla, right? Shining chrome. I mean, that's what they expect, and that is a glorious thing. And it's ugly. It's ugly.
And I feigned to mention, Michael, what was it that changed Nux? Kindness.
Going back to Star Wars.
Going back to a lot of episodes we've already
Well,
done.
Yeah.
Yeah, about how God's kindness leads to repentance.
And that you can most recently listen to our episode number 69 on Star Wars episode 6, The Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great picture of that, kindness leading to repentance. What else on that? Anything else? Or can I talk about the audacity of hope? Or can I talk about...
Michael, I thought we weren't going to get political.
Or can I talk about Nirvana smells like hope.
There we are now.
In a so you here you have, I'm going to run through this real quick because this is another, you know, just like Nux was easy to point out in this story. As a Christ figure, what about that?
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, or you could say that he learned to follow in the footsteps of Christ and lay down his life for mm-hmm. others and show the mercy that Jesus and that God showed towards us. And then the other one, this is going to be real simple. Another simple point. What is the whole story? This whole, well, here we go. Furiosa, you got Little John, or I'm sorry, special cameo appearance by Mad Max, and their merry band of followers. Well, they're following a dream. That's what this is. That's what caused those breeders to escape and get Furiosa to transport them to the Green Place. I love that name because we're looking at this stark landscape, this apocalyptic nastiness. Who wants to live in a desert? Oh, my goodness. And so they're longing for that Green Place. That's a great metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they fight against the desert every day of their life. They're fighting against Immortan Joe every day of their life. They're fighting against this whole nasty system every day that is a system in a place that is defined by pagan atrocities. That's all this is, man. This is, you know, this is the Druids and the Celts and all the pagan practices, mm-hmm. hook 'em horns, dancing around bonfires naked. It's the whole shebang in yeah. one film. And they are ruled by the great adversary, Immortan Joe.
Mm.
He's the Satan. He is the Satan in this, in every single way. And they're fighting against him, but they have something that sets them apart from all the others in this land, in this place, in this apocalyptic landscape. And we'll get to that. But as our protagonists are traveling this barren, lifeless desert in the war rig, Max asks Furiosa if she knows what she's doing. I mean, what are you doing? Why are we going this way? What's going on? And what are the girls who are, you know, these breeders, what are they looking for? What's Furiosa looking for?
This is the best shot I'll ever have.
And them?
They're looking for hope.
What about you?
Redemption.
Yeah, simple. They're looking for hope. I'm looking for redemption. I submit that the two are one and the same. You mentioned, this whole movie's about redemption. I mean, everybody's looking for redemption of some sort. I mean, except for the antagonist, right?
Yeah.
Well, wait a second, because Immortan Joe says at the very beginning, I am your redeemer. What's this redemption? Obviously, it's a noun. And the top definition is it's the act of saving or being saved from sin, from error, or from evil. Oh, fits perfectly.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking for redemption. That's their hope.
That's their water.
They are looking for a better land, Brendan, a better city, something other, with a capital O,
mm-hmm.
something other than what the Satan, Immortan Joe, has built. And you mentioned it, the Green Place no longer exists. I don't know what happened. It got poisoned. Soured, I think, is the word that the...
The ground soured.
Yes.
Yeah.
It no longer exists, but hope does. And the hope of redemption does. And Max knows where the better city is. He knows where their home is. Furiosa is wanting to continue on. Well, it's not there anymore. Let's continue. Let's continue traveling. There's a place many miles, many days hence from here. Let's wing it. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if this is going to work for us.
All right. This is your way home.
We go back?
Hmm.
Back?
Yeah.
I thought you weren't insane anymore.
What are they saying?
He wants to go back from where they came.
Citadel. What's there to find at the Citadel?
Green.
And water.
There's a ridiculous amount of clear water. And a lot of crops.
It's got everything you need, as long as you're not afraid of heights.
Where does the water come from?
He pumps it up from deep in the earth, calls it Aquacola, and claims it all for himself.
And because he owns it, he owns all of us.
I don't like him already.
It'll take 2 weeks to skirt the wall of mountains.
No. I suggest we go back the same way we came. Through the canyon.
It's open, we know that, right? He brought all his war parties through.
So we take the war rig and we charge it right through the middle of them. We can decouple the tanker at the pass. Shut it off behind us.
Come on.
And how exactly do we take the Citadel? Assuming we're still alive by then.
If we can block the pass, it'll be easy. All that's left are his war pups. And war boys too sick to fight.
And we'll be with Nux. He's a war boy. He'll be bringing us home, bringing back what's stolen as he's meant to.
Yeah. It feels like hope.
Wow. Mm. There's that word again, hope. And there's another picture of this war boy as the Redeemer, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to take back home that which was stolen. We were stolen from God by sin, weren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we were swallowed up by death.
Yeah.
Because of that sin. But anyway, that's not the point I wanted to make, but that is brilliant. And tack that on to your point as well. But so you know, special guest star Mad Max, he knows everything that they need can be found at the Citadel. And Nux realizes this feels like hope. Now we have something. We have something that we can hope on. But Furiosa, she doesn't understand how this plan could work. She has hope, but it's misdirected. And as I said before, she wants to just keep going. Let's go. But Max redirects her hope. Redirects that because, well, he redirects it especially when he addresses what she is really looking for. Remember that other scene.
It'll be a hard day. But I guarantee you that 160 days ride that way. There's nothing but salt. At least that way, you know, we might be able to... together. Come across some kind of redemption.
Oh, now... See, at first, Brendan, this was reminding me of Abraham. I just kept thinking Abraham and leaving the land of his ancestors, the Chaldeans, and going into, well, Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 10, out of the New English Translation. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place he would later receive as an inheritance. And he went out without understanding where he was going. And by faith, he lived as a foreigner in the promised land, as though it were a foreign country, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, who were fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with firm foundations, whose architect and builder is God. That's how I saw Furiosa and the girls. That's what they were doing. They were going and looking for the city built on firm foundations, not this Immortan Joe craziness, this Satan, you know, mm-hmm. that's a liar and the father of lies. Yep. Really? Right? But now I'm seeing this whole group as the faithful remnant of Israel. The remnant is a concept that's talked about throughout the prophets and even in the New Testament. That faithful remnant of Israel, particularly as they were coming out of Babylonian captivity. Now I'm seeing that they are headed back to their city and to the promise of redemption provided by Messiah. That's what they were looking for. That's the city that Abraham was looking for. He wasn't looking for, I mean, Jesus said in our last episode, when I was talking about how weird time travel and Jesus being able to come in and out, one of the things that he says was, Abraham saw my day and rejoiced. That's what that
passage in Hebrews is alluding to. Yeah. The city, the holy city, the holy Jerusalem, the holy Mount Zion, Jesus as the head, the cornerstone of that temple. Well, this is all fitting together, but now here they're coming back. They're wanting to go back to their city, occupy, and receive the promise of redemption provided that will be provided by Messiah. And so this whole thing, this whole scene tying into what you were setting up and Nux sacrificing himself in this desert scene in this war, I got to read this long passage out of Isaiah chapter 41.
Well, it is your favorite book of the Bible.
Well, it's the best book of the Bible. Let me, should I do it NIV or should I do it New Living Translation. Let's cut some people some slack here. Chapter 41, verses 10 through 11, and this is some promises of God to Israel, you know, and this is taking place after his servant coming from the east, which is Cyrus, who comes and conquers Babylon, and then the Israelites are freed to go. So anyway, we pick up in verse 10. Don't be afraid, God says, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up with my victorious right hand. See, all your angry enemies lie there, confused and humiliated. Anyone who opposes you will die and come to nothing. You will look in vain for those who tried to conquer you. Those who attack you will come to nothing. For I hold you by your right hand. I, Yahweh, your God. And I say to you, don't be afraid. I am here to help you. Though you are a lowly worm, O Jacob, don't be afraid, people of Israel, for I will help you. I am Yahweh, your Redeemer. I am the Holy One of Israel. You will be a new threshing instrument with many sharp teeth. You will tear your enemies apart, making chaff of mountains. You will lose, making chaff of mountains. I saw that happen in this film.
Yeah.
Okay. You will toss them into the air, and the wind will blow them all away. A whirlwind will scatter them. Then you will rejoice in Yahweh. You will glory in the Holy One of Israel. When the poor and needy search for water and there is none, and their tongues are parched from thirst, then I, Yahweh, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will never abandon them. I will open up rivers for them on the high plateaus. I will give them fountains of water in the valleys. I will fill the desert with pools of water. Rivers fed by springs will flow across the parched ground. I will plant trees in the barren desert, cedar, acacia, myrtle, olive, cypress, fir, and pine. I am doing this so all who see this miracle will understand what it means that it is Yahweh who has done this, the Holy One of Israel, who created it. That is the whole catharsis, isn't it, of this film? And it just tied, Brendan, it just tied so perfectly well. I had to read that. Sorry for reading such a long passage there. But that hope fulfilled is living water. Talks over and over again about water. And these people need water. They need that aqua cola or whatever it is. Don't become addicted to it, right? You need water.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way around that. And it reminds me of John chapter 4, when Jesus is having his appointment with that Samaritan woman at the well. Such a pivotal moment in history.
Again, your favorite part.
Yes.
Yeah.
A pivotal moment in all of history. But you know, he asks her, draw me some water. And, you know, how is it you being a Jew ask me, a Samaritan woman, for water? Jesus, if you knew who it was, who you're talking to, you would have asked me for water, living water.
in verse 14, he says, but whoever drinks some of the water I will give him will never be thirsty again. But the water that I will give him will become in him, a fountain of water springing up to eternal life. She says, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty. That's the water that they're looking for. That is the hope that they're looking for. And it's provided by the Redeemer. And so your key text, all you have to do, friends, when you are sitting on your
double-decker couch
watching Furiosa Road with special guest star Mad Max, because you all are, because so many people say this is the greatest movie ever made. It's a masterpiece. So you're going to be sitting there with your friends. You have something to point them to. All you have to remember is this verse, Proverbs 13, verse 12, out of the New Living Translation. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a dream fulfilled is a tree of life. The hope of Israel could be found at Jerusalem when Messiah came, when he came and redeemed them from their sins. Then, at that time, he made streams flow down the slopes, and he produced springs in the middle of valleys. He turned the desert into a pool of water and quenched their thirst forever. And we too can drink that fountain that springs up to eternal life. And that, Brendan, that is good news. Yay! Questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks.
I think you got it.
Okay, what Christian themes have you found in, I'll say it proper, Mad Max Fury Road, starring Furiosa? Oh! Featuring, starring, about Furiosa and her merry band of... Anyway, we know that you found them if you watched it. And you know what? I said put up your filters. I think you could watch this film. Don't have your kids watch it. I mean, I wouldn't. You know, 15, 14, lower than that. I certainly wouldn't. But people, this movie is a blockbuster. It is rated high. People love this movie for the most part. There are more people that love, enough people that love it that justify you being able to use it as a tool for Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a great tool for it. So let us know what Christian themes that you found in Mad Max Fury Road. Time for a little feedback, listener feedback. And we got a voicemail sent in from our good friend, John Wilkerson, over at thewiredhomeschool.com.
Gentlemen, John Wilkerson here, and I have to say that I really, really enjoyed your review. Sorry, rustling my mic here. I really enjoyed your review of Interstellar. And the point that you brought out about the fact that God transcends time and space. He just looks down on it as this ruler. It's like a ruler in the middle of a football field. And I know the football field's finite, but let's just say that it represents eternity. And you put that little 12-inch ruler right in the middle of eternity on the 50-yard line. And that's all of human history. That's all of everything. Until God comes back in the form of his son, Jesus Christ, to redeem us. Yes, you know, Myrrh was in a situation where she was expectant. She was waiting and expectant for the return of her Savior. And the church today does the same thing. We are expectant. We are waiting for the return of our Savior, for him to do more than just redeem our souls, but redeem this world and redeem our corruptible bodies. And we may think we know when that's going to happen. We may think it's going to happen in a certain number of years, but God has his own plans. He has his own timeline, and he will return when it's the right time. And I would even venture to say, and maybe this is, maybe if someone from the Theonauts is listening, I would venture to say that as far as God the Father is concerned, since he transcends all time, Christ has already returned. Now, we don't see it in this one-directional timeline that we're on, but I think when you think about the transcendence of God and how he is outside of it all, to him it's already occurred. It's a done deal. And what a glorious day that will be. Oh, what a glorious day that will be when our Savior comes and redeems us and redeems this world, and all is put back anew and renewed, just like in Interstellar, just like when Murr's dad comes back and redeems mankind and says, hey, I have a new home for you. Let's go check it out. Keep up the great work, guys. Loving what you guys do. And I'll talk to you again sometime.
That's a man that loves Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and it's when you are associated with and you spend your time interacting with and bouncing ideas off of people such as that, that's the church building one another up and edifying one another and things. And that is, we need people, we need the church, we need Christians to be a little bit more serious, I think, about the gospel call and about the Great Commission and about inviting others to come and drink of this water that Jesus offers, this water that bubbles up to eternal life. I don't know, Brendan. That call was so encouraging, and it also just points out again that we have so much work to do. We have much work to do, and we all need tools. We all need tools in order to bridge that gap, to get over that hurdle of how do I share Jesus with people, right? So we're thankful that what we're doing here is helping.
Yeah.
Right. We hear from enough people that thank us for what we're doing and find value in what we're doing. We need more people to do it. What did you have any thoughts that you wanted to tack onto what John said?
Yes. His idea that Christ has already returned.
Yeah.
I love that.
There you go. That is going into the Tesseract right there.
Yeah.
I did some study on Tesseract this past week.
Wasn't that kind of cool?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of cool? Just that idea, like, I can't help but agree with him, because aren't we the hands and feet? Aren't we the body? Aren't we the body of Christ already?
Yes, we are. We are like, the body.
Like, we, physical body,
yes.
Right here.
Yes.
Right here.
Here and like, now.
We're already here.
Yep.
Now, and that's not saying, like, oh, we're as powerful. No, we're not. But we're the ones on earth doing the work.
Yes.
We're the
ones. That's what he left us here for.
Yeah. So in a way, John, you're absolutely right. Yes.
We're only here because of his long-suffering, his ever-loving kindness, his mercy. Because he wants all to come unto me.
Mm-hmm.
All. You who are weary and heavy laden. Wow. Anything else?
Oh, not with that, no.
You know what time it is?
Oh, I know what time it is.
Who goes there? It is I.
Potatoes.
No, not potatoes. Oh. It is time for Patron St. Philip and our trip down to King Philip's stables.
Yes. He says, you guys did a really good job with this one, and I now think Interstellar warrants a second viewing for me. First off, the score is indeed excellent, and my favorite thing about the film.
Oh.
Maybe second favorite after Anne Hathaway being in it.
She's a phenomenal actress.
Amen, brother.
Yes.
One thing I get from the Interstellar, one thing I get from Interstellar is how Cooper felt the call to go on a mission that set him at odds with his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how he had the discipline to follow the call and fulfill his mission. For a Christian, sometimes following God can set us at odds with our loved ones, and yet when we are convinced God has a task for us, and there's no conflict with it in the Bible, we need to be obedient.
Mm.
Here's one of Jesus' hard sayings. Matthew 10, verse 35 through 39 from the New King James Version. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be those of his own household. For who loves the father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it.
That is a hard saying.
That's one of those rocks. So also, Cooper was willing to risk his life for the mission and found life in the end, not just for himself, but for the rest of humanity. Thanks for the show, guys. Hashtag my wee lad Gimli. That one sounded kind of off kilter at the end.
It was neat, huh?
That was
a little sleight of hand over here on my part. Yes, great thoughts. And see, we know that you all y'all, find your own Christian themes in all of these films that Brendan and I review. And we love hearing your thoughts and being able to add. See, now it's in the show notes, Brendan, yeah. In our actual rundown, the one that we use to do this show, which people can always find the link to our actual show notes at the bottom of our blog posts on ChristInCinema.com. Lots of information. Sometimes they have verses and things that we didn't even include in the show, but go along with our thoughts, and you may find those helpful as well. Of course, you get to read Philip's comments that he leaves in the blog. You can't hear. I guess I could start making it so that I can link to the actual voicemails and things of people. I'll look into doing that. I know I can in Google Docs and whatnot. But so anybody else that has thoughts that they want to share with us, we'll give you all the ways to contact us in just a few moments. But what?
Don't do it.
Okay.
Got more feedback.
Oh, we do? Whoa. Yes,
because Mr. Wilkerson again, Mr. John Wilkerson,
uh-huh,
actually left a comment on the MMR this
week. Oh, yes. What was the MMR?
Well, the Monday movie review was on War Room.
Uh-huh.
And
War Rig?
War Room.
Oh!
War Room.
Okay.
This is the room that they actually made the War Rig in.
Oh, or I thought it was the where they keep the breeders, down in the War Room of the War Rig. I don't
know, that's just the breeder room.
Oh, okay.
Or the vault.
Ah.
Because it's a vault.
Okay, there you go.
But anyway, John left this, and let's just read it.
Okay.
He says, I find reviewing Christian films very difficult. On one hand, you want to encourage fellow believers to continue to make films that appeal to Christians, but you also can't ignore the biggest problem, lack of experience.
Yeah.
I think in 5 to 10 years, we'll start seeing much better films from Christian filmmakers.
Yeah, and see, now, John is also one of those people that he'll do it in love, but he's not going to hold back. He's not going to tell you that something is excellent if it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he interviewed the guy from what was that Christian movie that they got John Rhys-Davies Gimli to do?
Beyond the Mask.
Yes, he interviewed the filmmaker of that.
We need to watch that.
Well, okay, he saw it. He saw it in the story. So he posted a picture the other day on Twitter or wherever Instagram said, you know, saw in the wild, you know, at the store in the rack. Yeah. But anyway, he reviewed the guy, interviewed the guy, and gave the movie 3 out of 5 stars. I thought, that's a man that stands by his principle. Ooh. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, he makes great points. Let's just be honest. Let's just be honest. We don't have to be mean, right? And, Brendan, you wrote your review. Here's what I loved about your Monday movie review on War Room. You pulled a Christian theme out of there that the movie isn't even about.
Yes, and that annoyed me.
So if you haven't read Brendan's Monday movie, you know, does this, are we already into
I was gonna say we need that singer, sir.
Okay. Well-mannered frivolity.
Okay, now we're in our well-mannered frivolity segment. So continuing on, everybody get to ChristInCinema.com and read Brendan's Monday movie review on War Room and read his angle on this film. He says they dropped the ball. The more important part of this film is not this prayer room. It is X. And X is something that we need more of anyway.
Yeah.
Just as much as prayer. Let's not allow this film to say that, you know, it, because people aren't on their knees enough, that because it's not one thing or the other. It's mm-hmm. a combination of things, and they dropped the ball.
Yeah. And it, some at some points in the movie, I felt like it was a guilt trip. You know, you've got Miss Clara saying, oh, you know, you've got to have your prayer room and, you know, you got to do all that.
You're not set up proper.
That's, yeah, it's to me that from the creator to the audience, or excuse me, the sub creator.
Let's be careful here.
From the sub creator to the audience, that's a guilt trip. And that isn't.
That's no way to get across a message, is it?
Yeah, that's, yeah. Especially to people who believe the same thing you do.
Yeah.
You know, because we.
When you're preaching to the choir.
Exactly. Hmm. So yeah, the Christian angle that wasn't even in the movie that should have been, which really was what the movie was all about. You just got to read.
Did they even mention the word?
No, they don't.
So, like, I mean, I didn't catch it. Do you think that the filmmakers were actually blind to that? Like, they couldn't see the forest through the trees, or
perhaps?
Yeah, that's perhaps. Interesting, isn't it? Because that happens to all of us.
I think it's like what John says: lack of experience. Now, then again,
those Kindred brothers have plenty of experience.
Well, now, hold on. Just because it's experience in the wrong thing, is it? Does that still make it experience?
I've only seen one of their films.
I haven't seen either of them.
No,
I did. I saw Facing the Giants.
Okay, I've only seen
There's Facing the Courageous. Giants, Courageous, and then Fireproof.
Yeah, my wife wants me to see Fireproof real bad, but I don't like Kirk Cameron. I don't want to see Kirk Cameron. I don't want to see the guy.
I want to see Kirk Cameron. I want to see him save Christmas. Or I want to see him left behind.
So I watched.
I really want to see Kirk Cameron left behind.
Walk.
Yeah. I thought my jokes were bad.
Man. You know, I hate comedians.
Okay, so Courageous. I enjoyed that film. I thought that was a great message in that film. But that's the only one I've seen of those guys, so I really can't comment. But they've been doing it for a long, long time. Hey, you know what I did this past weekend was. Here locally in Manchester, Tennessee, they had what was called the Hope and Family Fest. It was held at the Rotary Park Amphitheater, and it was basically a big fundraiser for another event that's coming up in October called One Day of Hope. Hmm. And One Day of Hope, last year, there were over 25 churches that partnered together here in Coffee County, and they fed and clothed and provided dental and medical help and job fair type thing and haircuts, everything you can think of, to over 4,500 people. And this year, they don't have 25 churches, they have 40 coming together. And so what I did was at this Hope and Family Fest is I met with one of the members of the board of directors, and I interviewed him about One Day of Hope. And that is a video that I'm putting together right now. I hope to have it up within the next couple of days or so, and it'll be available on our YouTube channel and on at gctnetwork.com. Very exciting stuff and some real nuggets in there. You want to talk about following Jesus and what does that look like? What are we supposed to do? I don't know if I can do anything important for Jesus. Oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And I think that this video will help immensely. So look for that. At gctnetwork.com coming up real soon. Anything else from you?
Yeah. Kind of mentioned it off the mics last week, but guys, you can consider this a prayer request.
All right.
We don't have a stinger for a prayer request, but...
No. We'll get one from the War Room when we do that movie.
Oh, what? Sorry, that's not coming on the list. But no, okay, seriously... right now, prayer request, because for me, grad school is in perspective right now. It's on the horizon.
Grad school for what? You gonna be a doctor?
No. This will be the degree will be for a master's in theater.
Master
of theater arts. And with that will come the ability to become a high school drama teacher.
There you go.
So,
all right, everybody, keep Brendan in your prayers about that. Keep finding Christ in cinema in your prayers. Keep me in your prayers, please. If you guys have any prayer requests, let us know. We'll do it on the show. We'll do it in private. Whatever you want. That's something that we need to be doing for each other. We're brothers, we're sisters, we're family. We are living stones fit together in the temple of God. We are the body of Christ. Anything else for well-mannered frivolity?
Oh, no. That's
okay. It. The lightning round! Anything?
Oh, yeah.
What?
So this is another listener challenge.
Okay.
And I don't know, we Michael and I want to get some discussion on this. What kind of horror movie do you like?
Listeners?
And I'm asking this with at least two possible answers right now. I'm sure there are more.
Now, we know that Philip doesn't like horror movies.
Right, right.
But perhaps one of these two he may lean towards.
Yes.
Okay.
I think from reading Philip, I think I can feel which one he would lean towards.
Well, he's a highly intelligent man. Yes. So.
Okay. So right now for me, there's option one. There is the psychological human thriller.
What does that mean? Like a psychotic person, a mental ward?
Well,
somebody didn't take their medication.
Well, not necessarily, but like the one that has a lot of mind games involved. The kind that's very, like I said, very suspenseful, almost like a mystery. You're trying
to
solve
it. Can you give
us
an example?
Let's see. Hide and Seek.
Never heard of it.
Robert De Niro.
Okay. Oh, Robert De Niro, Cape Fear.
Cape Fear.
Oh.
Yes.
How about?
Oh, that's a good one.
How about one of my very favorite movies of all time? Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Yes. Yes, because now, okay, let me go ahead and keep that example in mind.
Okay.
I'm going to go to option two. Option B. Okay. Option B, the supernatural horror.
Okay.
Like where you do actually have ghosts.
Would that
or demons or.
Is there a third option?
Sure. What would a third option be?
Slasher films. Or is that psychological?
Well, it depends on. It depends on who's doing the slashing. Is it a human or is it a supernatural
being? Well, I think that slasher films, I don't know. I kind of think that they're their own.
Well, now, do you mean like
Freddy?
Halloween?
Yes.
Like Jason. Freddy, Jason.
Yeah, Freddy. And,
I mean, granted, those are humans. And even Freddy Krueger, granted, he's this somehow.
Well, that is supernatural.
Somehow transferred from human to supernatural. There's an interplay.
Okay,
of both.
So if it's a human, it could fall under psychological thriller and or whatever, and then but if it is like Hellraiser or something like that, then that's supernatural.
Yeah.
Okay. Leprechaun
or even Jaws.
Ooh.
Jaws would be more of, I mean, it's not a human.
Yeah, that's not human.
But
versus
it's
human.
But it's still like it's a man conflict. It's a man versus nature.
Okay.
It's man
okay.
versus the natural world. So just so listeners, oh dear listeners, listeners gather around. We want to talk to you because
we have Halloween coming up.
We do have Halloween coming up and we want to make the most of it.
Ah.
We want to, you know, we don't want to be frivolous. I mean, then again, come on. This is Finding Christ in Cinema.
And the holiday warrants it. Yeah. Anyway, it lends itself to
yes. So and I guess really are we trying to see which show we should do for Halloween?
That's kind of what we're doing, isn't
because,
it?
Because we've talked about it for at least a month now.
Yeah.
And we
haven't
landed
on anything.
You know, you've got me over here. I want to do The Ghost of Mr. Chicken with
yeah.
Don Knotts. And Michael over
I'll
here.
I'll do any Don Knotts film at any time.
Michael wants to do the Saw movies.
No, I've never seen them. I don't watch those kind of movies. I do love, I mean, you know, like I said, The Shining. Oh man, please, we need more. You know what? Can I go on? Have you said enough? Do you think?
I think you got the point.
Can I go on a little bit of a tangent here?
Are we going on a field
trip? What is it? Yes.
Rabbit trail.
Yes. What is it with these horror movies on the Apple Movies trailer? I'm getting inundated with these films, and they all look exactly the same. They all are that. Now they're all that first person, you know, camcorder view and shaky and running through the hallways at a school for, you know, because some student got slashed there, you know, decades ago, and he's coming back to haunt, or these demon possession movies where people get their necks twisted around stuff. But they all have exactly the same look. We need a radical revolution in the horror film genre. And they all, like, splash that on their things, a radical revolution in the horror genre. You know, it's like, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. I'm not even watching these films, but this looks just like the last trailer that I saw. And then you talk about Supernatural. There's, I can't remember what it's called, and I'm not going to pull up the app right now. Something like A Christmas Story or something, and it's Santa Claus versus what do they have in Europe? The Krampus or whatever, which is like the
Krampus.
Yes.
Oh,
and this
man.
Just, you know, so it's supernatural and stuff, but it just looks dumb. And it even has William Shatner in it. And I don't know if he's a radio host or a podcaster. I can't really tell. You know, they're the same thing, really. But he's in it, and this thing just looks awful. Of course, that's what I said about Mad Max Fury Road, and here
Furiosa Road.
Yes, and here we completely redeemed it. But anyway, that's my little. I just want to go on that little tangent. Bring back more of The Shining, Cape Fear. I think maybe that's it, Brendan. Maybe I'm just at a point where I think the psychological thriller and the psychopaths and things that's scary. I think that's scary. Whereas when I was younger, it was bring me more Freddy Krueger and Pinhead, please. Thank you. Michael Myers. We got to have Michael Myers there.
Yeah.
One of my bands when I was a youngster, when I was a teenager, the first record I ever put had a song on it about Michael Myers. So, yeah. Highly influential.
Wow.
Anyway, so there you go. There's your lightning rounds. Whatever. Brendan, I don't know what we're going to do for Halloween, but what are we doing next episode?
Next week, we'll be looking up another request.
Uh-huh.
Another one of Ron's. Go ahead. Thank you. I know he's saying his name. We're going to be looking at The Kingdom of Heaven. The movie. The movie. Not the real thing. The movie.
Which is hopefully going to be, we'll be able to find a microcosm of the Kingdom of Heaven in it.
Oh, I
hope
so.
In order to present some themes. This stars Legolas, FCC's very own Legolas. Mm-hmm. What's his name again?
Orlando Bloom.
Has FCC's very own Aslan.
Liam Neeson.
Wait, have we had Liam Neeson? Is he FCC's very own yet?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, The Dark Knight.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Ra's al Ghul.
So we have FCC's very own Ra's al Ghul, Aslan, Liam Neeson. FCC's very own
David Thewlis.
Yes, who is better known and near and dear to my heart as Professor
Lupin.
Lupin.
There you go.
And who else is in it? Probably some other FCC's.
A lot of people. Yeah. I just remember watching it and just thinking, wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people here.
So it's going to be a...
Brendan Gleeson.
Oh!
He's in it.
So we got half the Harry Potter cast, and we got Lord of the Rings in there. Yeah. We've got Narnia. We haven't done Narnia. We aren't going to ever do Narnia. Yeah. There's no...
Let's be honest.
Yeah, there's no point in doing it.
Like there was no point in doing Calvary.
Anyway, so we're going to be talking about The Kingdom of Heaven coming up on the next episode. Lord willing, that will take place next week. And friends, as always, Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the GCT Network studio each Thursday, Lord willing, at around 3 p.m. Central Time. That would be 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I think I'm going to switch to Eastern Time because everybody knows Eastern Time. No, everybody always asks me, so Central Time, what is that? We might switch to Eastern Time here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us for live video and especially chat using the chat room and video player at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into
all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Now, to witness
the firepower of this fully armed and
operational ministry, including all 72 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema, Brendan's Monday movie review, and links to all our social media profiles, visit our website at christincinema.com. You want to send us email? The old-fashioned way of communication here in the 21st century? Address those. Stick a stamp on it. Address it to FCC at gctnetwork.com.
You can call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. And if that phone number doesn't work, we actually have a new one installed just last week, brand new, by Christopher Nolan himself. Yes, it is 507-407-4286. Now, let's say you want to listen to the good old podcast. You can go to iTunes if the air gets to it.
The air got to it!
You can go to Stitcher if you like duct tape.
Uh-huh.
Love duct tape.
And you can go to TuneIn Radio if you like falafel.
I don't like falafel.
I do. Search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here on the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas, the Theonauts.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. And Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
Oh, what a day. What a lovely day.
It's a madhouse! A madhouse!
And that is a wrap!
I don't understand.
Potatoes.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
I thought my jokes were bad.
You know I hate comedians.
Not to tell anyone else of your bursting.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
It's a trap!
Never tell me the odds.
Oh, no, not you again. Stop.
Double-decker couch.
Yeah, double-decker couch. I'm doing that again.
Double-decker couch.
Yeah, one more.
Double-decker couch.
I told you he was tricks.
Just as fascinating.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
Transmission.